Speaking of libertarian shows, we got the thumbs up.
Oh, so here we go. We are just going to talk about the Odyssey today.
Yep.
And then maybe we'll get to some other stuff, but let's not beat around the bush. Let's
get right to our destination and talk about the Odyssey.
Yeah, no long meandering, getting eaten by cyclopses or hanging out with weird women.
We got
not going to have any women involved in our lives here.
We got four eyes and two takes.
here we go.
Yeah.
Odyssey. Okay. You ready for this? You ready? Is camera on me?
No.
Didn't like it.
This is a bad attitude.
Didn't like it.
Give me your.
You liked it though.
I thought it was great.
You thought it was great.
I wouldn't describe it as like a masterpiece or anything like that. But I would give it a 4 out of 5, maybe a 4.25 out of 5.
I'd give it like a 4 out of 10.
That's
maybe a 6 out of 10.
That is
somewhere in there.
That is dismal and inaccurate, frankly.
Look,
why don't you make the case for yourself?
Well, first, actually, I'm gonna feel bad bashing this movie because I don't think it's a it's impossible to say it's a terrible movie because a lot about it is really good.
Yes.
So much of it is really good. So I don't think it was like bad. It was technically impressive and well made. And I will say a lot of the things that the criticisms you heard on social media before anyone had even seen the freaking movie were bad and wrong. I didn't dislike it because it was too woke or because the casting or something. All the cast was exceptional.
We'll get into some of the casting issues,
but by and large, the cast was really good. Lupita Nyong'o, who was the focus of a lot of conservative outrage before the movie because she's a black woman playing Helen of Troy. Go fuck yourself. She was great, I thought, actually. She's not in a very important role in the movie.
She's a minor character, yeah.
But I actually thought she was particularly good in that role.
Yes.
She made sense for that version of Helen of Troy. She's actually playing a dual role because she's playing Helen's sister, Clytemnestra, and in this it's her twin sister, who is the wife of Agamemnon, and there's some stuff involving that, which is really good. I liked a lot, actually.
A character with no dialogue and then has like kind of a scene stealing
or a very cool
show stealing performance.
I mean, I don't know how much that would be the closest thing to a spoiler. Obviously, if you've not seen this movie and you don't want to hear any discussion of it, you should not be watching this. I don't think there's nothing surprising really that happens in the movie, so I don't think your experience will be ruined by listening to this if you haven't seen it. But if you really want to go in without knowing anything, don't listen to this. But she was good. The other controversial casting decision was Elliot Page, formerly Ellen Page. I could see that not working for some people.
It didn't work for me.
Didn't work for you.
I don't want to be offensive here, but I think the trolls were kind of right in this respect, where
can't convincingly play a soldier.
A male soldier who dies in the war, yes.
Elliot Page is in a pretty important role, unlike Helen of Troy.
Not a huge amount of screen time, but
pretty important.
Significant character in the plot. I mean, the movie opens with Elliot Page.
And is significant to Odysseus's feelings of guilt and shame for how he helped the Greek side win the Trojan War, which is the major theme of the movie and is ultimately why I did not like it.
Yeah. Elaborate, if you would.
So it is the big idea of the movie. Mm-hmm. It is the theme of the movie, is that Odysseus feels shame for winning the war in a cheating kind of way by doing the Trojan horse, which gets dragged into the city. By the way, that's all really done really cool, really well conceived of. The horse is actually, they leave it in the sand and it's like half washed into the ocean and the people are like drowning in it by the time it's pulled into the city. Very cool.
It does something that often depictions of the Odyssey do not do, which makes the Trojan horse menacing and creepy, and then also on the inside horrifying, right? Yeah.
And then when they break out of the horse and they steal through the night to open the gates, and then they open the gates and Agamemnon is standing there, just, I think the kids call it aura farming the shit out of it. Agamemnon is so cool and is the is the best, like, steals the whole movie before. It's yes. just awesome. His costume design, it's Benny Safdie,
yeah.
who's an actor I don't know very well.
And, you know, the actor himself actually has very little to do.
It's really
in
the costume
movie.
Doing it.
It's the costume and just the, well, I don't know, the,
it's just the awesome.
Filmography or whatever.
It's
yeah.
so cool.
He is just like death himself
it
in the movie.
It is so cool. Yeah. Like, I would watch his scenes again. I would watch like a super cut of just his scenes.
The hair stands up on the back of your neck. You quake in your seat yes. when he is on the screen.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is so great. So kudos to Christopher Nolan for nailing that. It's so cool.
But yeah, elaborate
the
on
walls
why you
of
like
Troy
it.
Themselves mm-hmm. were not high enough for me. This was like a two-story wall. This is a wall that seemed like it could have been overcome with ladders.
Yeah. Well, this is the downside of relying on practical sets. Yeah. Is it limits.
I don't want to constantly compare things to that Troy movie, mm-hmm. Which is now being a little bit overhyped. I thought it was a good, Troy was a good movie, and there's a lot I like about it. It's mm-hmm. maybe being a little bit overhyped now. But Troy has a rather impressive wall.
Those are some high walls. Yeah.
Which was more fitting. But okay. Odysseus feels guilt. And that is the whole message. He doesn't even want to get home because he's punishing himself, or he doesn't want to go back to being a family man, maybe. He can't.
Well, he feels there is no Odysseus
left.
To go home to because he's kind of
because
abandoned,
of what he did.
He abandoned his principles and himself in the war.
And he yeah. has conversations with Athena, who is the only goddess, Greek goddess, who appears in the movie at all. Mm-hmm. And actually, those conversations might not even, maybe they're just taking place in his head.
Right.
Athena's almost a hallucination. And it is eventually revealed that, and this is kind of cool, that he sees Athena, who's played by Zendaya, who does a fine job, mm-hmm. In that form because there was a peasant girl in Troy who is killed brutally by the soldiers, and this is like dishonoring to Athena, and so Athena appears as this peasant girl, but maybe it's just his internal guilt.
Yeah.
Maybe mm-hmm. there's no Athena at all. Mm-hmm. And that is a very, and I haven't invented this criticism because I've seen it a lot on social media. This is a very Christian idea. Not a Christian Brischke idea, a religiously Christian idea.
Yeah.
And
well,
I agree with it.
I was named after the religion.
And I agree with that because he has, it's very like, my God, why have you forsaken me? That line from the Bible was in my head as I was watching a lot of this movie. It was transmitting that idea. And it's, but he is out of balance with his God because of dishonorable and evil thing he has done, and he must seek redemption by surrendering himself to the waves and you know, processing his guilt and his trauma. And that's the idea of the movie, and I don't like that idea.
Yeah.
Because
why?
I'm a little sick of that idea, frankly. It was the same idea as in Oppenheimer, and I think it was a good choice for Oppenheimer. Where there's a great man who invents something amazing and world-altering and then must reckon with his guilt in how it's killed people and it's not going to be under his control, and maybe I've set in motion events that will destroy the whole world. And that was an interesting idea for Oppenheimer. I was kind of bored by this idea here. It made Odysseus a very grim and sour and unhappy character and a bit one-note and uninteresting to me. Whereas, I swear this is the last time I'll do it, compared to the Troy movie, where Sean Bean, Boromir, Ned Stark plays him, but he's jovial and clever,
yeah.
and he's the smartest boy in the room, and it's more interesting.
Yeah, it would...
it sparks
and that would
joy.
Be, that would be more faithful to Homer's, the actual Homeric poem, where Odysseus is a trickster.
Yes.
As someone with all these clever japes
yes.
about winning the war and getting back
yes.
home, right? And all of that is completely stripped out of
right.
this movie. Yeah.
Do you see
Odysseus,
what I'm saying? Why
I completely understand what you're saying, and I'm going to... I'm going to give some pushback, but like,
okay.
yeah, if you wanted to do a faithful screen adaption of Odysseus as he appears in the Homeric poem, you'd want a kind of Jamie Lannister type character, a bloodthirsty Jack Sparrow.
Right.
You know, someone who has a humor about themselves in the world and is always coming up with these clever little ruses to get them out of their binds.
Right.
That is not this movie whatsoever. What you wanted, and this is why you're disappointed, is you wanted a Peter Jackson Odyssey, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If Peter Jackson had done the Odyssey, it would have been brighter and more fun and been able to incorporate a lot of those elements of Odysseus into the movie. But this is a Christopher Nolan Odyssey, right? I was thinking this morning, because you previewed this take a little in the office yesterday, and so I was thinking this morning, it's like, how can I explain to Robbie that he's wrong in a way that he will understand the least? And so this is what I got. This is what I got.
Cool.
It's as if, imagine if you will, the metal band Slayer produces a Christmas album.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And your critique of the Christmas album is like, oh, this is kind of thrash.
Frosty the Snowman!
That's how it sounds, yeah. You know that because all Slayer albums sound like that. Yeah. And your critique of the Christmas album would be like, oh, this sounds like all the other Slayer albums. In that sense, it's not groundbreaking at all. But it is very different from all the other Christmas albums. And that's what provides... That's what's, it's genius, if you will. I wouldn't describe this movie necessarily as genius, right? Mm-hmm. So I was down for the Christopher Nolan version of the Odyssey. I like this idea of a traumatized war veteran, you know, bouncing between islands because he's just kind of trapped in his own head, in his own guilt. I thought that worked really well. People describe it as Christian. I don't think that's wrong, but it almost feels more Jewish or Old Testament to me. At the very end, there's a redemption arc and it ends on that note. So I see why people would describe it as that. But most of the movie is, again, it is this kind of, that kind of Old Testament notion of you owed God obedience and you were rebellious and now you are, you know, reaping the whirlwind. You are suffering as a result of it. Right. So I liked it, and one of the reasons I liked it is the individual scenes or, you know, sequences in the movie that I like the best are only going to work in a grim Christopher Nolan, PTSD version of the Odyssey. So what are some of the things that I thought worked the best? The Cyclops.
The Cyclops sequence is great.
Terrifying. A horror show, right? But see, that's the thing. Yes. If you were to have made Odysseus the trickster, that would have taken a lot of the horror and darkness out of that sequence, right? Instead, you know, because in the poem, he kind of banters a little bit with the Cyclops, right? His ruse where the Cyclops, lets the sheep out of the cave every day, and they have to like hide under
it's a bit Bilbo and Smoggy.
Right. If you were to have done it, that you couldn't do both, right? And I really liked this particular representation, but it has to be then slotted into a movie that is just like grimmer and darker, right?
Yeah, I liked all of the monster encounters. Basically, thought they were great sequences. My favorite series in the movie was with the witch Cersei.
Turning into animals. Some of the most terrifying body humor you will see.
Very good, very horror movie.
Body horror. Did I say body humor? Anyway.
Yeah. it's she's really good. She's scary. What she does to them is scary. Odysseus realizing after he shoots a deer or something and it turns back into a man. That was cool. Yeah, that part is really cool. My favorite Scylla, the monster by the whirlpool, scary, very scary.
It's like nestled in that like hornet's nest cocoon. That was really cool.
Yes, them being mowed down by the giants or the half giants that are, they almost look, somebody said Westworldy. McDonald said that is what they look like. All that is cool, but. To go to, you know, this is actually my main problem. So I think I could have appreciated this version of where it's about his guilt and he's a broken war veteran if it was entirely stripped of supernatural elements completely. But they're left in just enough for me to go, but wait, I know this story. And the real reason that, and I wanted to go to Odysseus and be like, man, you're not, responsible for any of this that happened. This all happened because Hera and Athena and Aphrodite were mad at each other, and Apollo and Artemis were mad at Poseidon, this is actually what is compelling about Greek mythology is, I'm sorry, it's the gods and the goddesses who are interesting characters, who are powerful, more powerful than man, and have these magic powers, but also have personalities and can just harm each other.
Are as petty and fallen as the rest of us.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we are their little playthings, right? Odysseus has Athena's favor, which brings him problems as the other goddesses and gods try to feud with her. But that's what, like, Poseidon is trying to destroy Troy because they didn't pay him for the wall. And it's a fight about who's the prettiest. And that's why all these events happen. And people are killing each other because the gods are inducing them to do this. Zeus wants to reduce the human population and is playing both sides off each other for these reasons. This is all very interesting.
Yeah.
But doesn't appear in the movie. And so, like, I don't feel, Odysseus should not feel any guilt about this because they are responsible for this. And they're not present in the movie, but they're present just enough for me to still raise that as an objection. Because Athena does appear, and they reference Poseidon. And they're like, oh, this is Poseidon's, the Cyclops is Poseidon's son. There was no Cyclops at all, and no sea monster, and they were just trying to get back, and he was feeling guilt about what he'd done, and there were none of the supernatural stuff, then I could understand Christopher Nolan's vision. But because enough of it is left in, I am forced to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, but wait, I know why these events are happening, and it's not, you have nothing to feel guilty about. Like, you should blame them or rebel against them. If you think this was all so horrible, an Odysseus who is, I reject the gods, what you have done, look at, that would be interesting, but he's not doing that.
Yeah.
Like Athena doesn't care that a peasant girl was killed. Athena cares if her peasant girl is killed,
right.
But she wants Aphrodite's peasant girls massacred.
Yeah, or turned into a spider or whatever, right?
Right?
Yeah.
So that's my, and that is just not part of his film. It doesn't reckon with that at all, which is, it's his movie. It's not mine, but I can't stop thinking about that aspect of it. And I think not doing the Greek gods is weird, because isn't that the interesting part about the mythology?
Yeah, I guess. But again, it's like,
I know. Make your own movie, Robbie, if you want. I get it. Fine. He just didn't want to do that. But I'm explaining why then it didn't resonate with me.
I understand. I think that's a fair, a fine critique. But it's not a problem that I had. Right. I think it was enough for me for the gods to be off screen or, you know, plausibly within his own head.
Yeah.
And then the supernatural elements, it's like, I mean, they're supernatural to us, but they're not really supernatural to the characters, right?
Yeah.
He plays it straight, and it's not like, you know, they see the Cyclops, they're terrified by it, but it's not like, how could this thing exist?
Right.
You know what I mean? So that all gelled with me. What I will complain about, it is a very, the story top to down is a modern story. It's not really telling an ancient. I mean, it looks ancient.
It looks ancient. I know that.
I think that's another reason.
The costumes and stuff didn't really. It looked ancient to me.
Yeah, that's another reason. I think the people complaining about the like racial casting just like didn't land. Like it just seems so ridiculous when you watch the movie because like it's ancient and mythical.
Right.
And in that environment, it's not weird or strange to see a black character.
Right.
Or,
and in a place in the world where there's Europe there, there's the Middle East
right,
there, there's like,
right.
There would be a range of like skin colors represented here. It doesn't, it's all fine.
If this was a story about, Alexander the Great's early days in Macedonia, and then there was a bunch of black characters, it's like, okay, that would be strange.
Right.
But no, so that completely worked. A couple things that I did that were kind of modern and took me out of the movie was the dialogue. They keep kind of switching back and forth between that kind of like affected, archaic way of speaking.
Yeah. Anne Hathaway spoke that way a lot.
Yeah.
The archaic sort of way.
Yeah, which I liked.
I liked, yes.
But then other characters would literally say, like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
There's one line where Odysseus, Matt Damon, he returns to Ithaca, his home island, but he's still kind of in disguise. And he's like, Odysseus sent me to assess the situation. What? What? No, yeah. You have to lay eyes on the kingdom or something like mm-hmm. that. You know, like, come on, like, do one or the other, right? And definitely do the former, not everyone.
Do one or the other, and this is the one you should
do. Right? Yeah, don't have a bunch of ancient Greek guys going around saying, yeah, for sure. Like, come on.
Yeah, I didn't really notice as much of that. It actually didn't bother me.
A couple more minor quibbles that I have. I really would have, and this is where I think maybe the kind of grim, play it straight Christopher Nolan aesthetic maybe let him down a little, is the suitors for much of the movie, the suitors who take over Odysseus's home in the mm-hmm. attempt to marry his wife, who's still holding out hope that her husband is alive. If you haven't read the 3,000-year-old poem, they should have been more menacing and more grotesque, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
well, they abuse dogs and old people.
So I guess they did have like a literal kick the dog moment, but like, I would have liked to see them, you know, like slurping on chicken bones and, you know, like abusing the slave girls or something like that. Like, to like really heighten the fact that these are just like bad.
No, they were giving the slave girls like opportunities for advancement is what it seemed like, right? Right, he recruited the slave girl to spy on to spy on Penelope.
The critical Marxist reading that they are sources of social mobility. Yeah, forces of social mobility.
I liked Robert Pattinson, the lead and most evil suitor. He was a menacing, snake-like, evil character.
He did a good little finger-like job. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Despicable.
Yeah. That was a very good performance. I really liked Anne Hathaway, too.
I did, too.
There was another part in the movie that it's difficult to even criticize this because it comes right before, like, one of her best moments in the film. But they give her some lines where... the son, Telemachus, is like, let me take the throne. You know, I need to assert control over this kingdom, kick these suitors out. She's like, oh, there's got to be a man on the throne. What about my experience? You know, surely, you know, I can girl boss this. And that's like, it's kind of an annoying, like, shoehorned feminist point. But then right after that, you know, she has the moment where she just like screams, you know, like, I want Odysseus. I want my husband. And just like storms off. And it's like, that was very good.
Yeah.
The other thing that I really would have liked to see is, you know, the guys on his crew trying to get back from Troy, they're too clean cut and well fed. These guys are starving and desperate shipwreck sailors, effectively. Yeah. They're on the one sun god's island and they're starving to death, right? Yeah. And that's why they kill these cows that they shouldn't. Make them look emaciated and haggard. Instead, they're like fat.
You know? Yeah, why are they still wearing armor at that point?
I'm right.
Like, by the third time, they have to frantically run back to the ship and like kind of swim onto the ship as some monster or series of monsters is chasing them, for which armor is doesn't help stop them at all. I would think they would stop wearing it.
Also, it's heavy and uncomfortable.
Right, why would stormtroopers wear armor in a universe where teddy bears can throw a rock at you and kill you? I think you would probably just stop wearing the clunky armor that slows you down.
Right. It's like, does Christopher Nolan think the teachers live in the school? Right. Right. Yeah.
I would think they would jettison it at that point, being so. Flee quickly back to the sea is such a central part of their identity at that point.
It's funny how often that there is a scene of them just running away in the movie.
Yeah, I would not. I would keep the anchor up at this point. But they're not. I mean, they are a well disciplined army, so they're actually not very pillagey ever.
Oh, okay. So this is another critique I would make is Matt Damon is. Or Odysseus, is racked with guilt over how they behaved in the war. And as is kind of revealed towards the end of the movie, like the violence they have now unleashed upon the world that will destroy civilization. But you don't really get a lot of the murder and pillaging, right? So for instance, the last, you know, you talk about how like them climbing out of the horse and taking over Troy, that's all done really well. And I agree it is. But if Matt Damon is so... Odysseus, sorry, I keep calling him Matt Damon. Yeah. But if he's so racked with guilt over his role in this conflict, I kind of would have liked to see him like gleefully participating in the pillaging so that would give him a stronger reason to feel such guilt.
Yeah.
Whereas really he just came up with the idea and then everything kind of happens around him and he's just like standing around looking shocked, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he should have been cutting people up with abandon.
It's also very just passive that he came up with the idea. There's no, we never get the scene where he's like, you know, just drawing in the sand out, and he goes, oh, wait a minute, you know, aha. Give him a little more of that spark of, this is the smartest man in this universe. Mm-hmm. But we never
see much
shown
of it,
why we would never think that other than it just being told to us. There's a lot of telling rather than showing in the movie.
There is, and that's partly a byproduct of it being told in part, you know, through flashbacks. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that was another, like, again, like, it worked for me given this film and the perspective that they're taking on it. But I could understand why people would maybe be disappointed about the Calypso scenes as well, because she's just kind of like a Charlize Theron is the actor.
Yeah,
she's just kind of a bland, sympathetic character.
Yes,
which. And there's a little bit of menace about her keeping him there, but not really.
A little, not really, because she kind of just lets him go. She kind of helps him figure out how to leave. And
yeah, it's therapeutic, right? Whereas Calypso in the poem is she's a temptress, right? You could have all these worldly pleasures and live forever.
Yeah.
Or you could go home.
Yeah.
And ultimately he decides he wants to go home.
Yeah.
Whereas this is kind of her just being like, oh, I'll let you go home when you're ready.
It's very Wizard of Oz-y too. It's like, oh, you had the power to go home all along. Just click your heels together or something. You know what I mean? I agree with that. I didn't like that. I loved her as Calypso. She's the ideal person to play Calypso.
If her island is intended as a purgatory, it works well.
Yes.
But again, if you're comparing it to what it could have been from the poem, sure. There maybe feels like a little bit
right. And she's feeding him the lotus. I think in the source material, the Lotus Eaters is a different island.
Yeah.
But that's a condensed for movie that I liked.
Yeah, makes sense.
So
yeah.
I'm not like it was literally different in some way, and I hate everything that's different. That was a perfectly fine adaptation of the source material. Mm-hmm.
I understand. It's like, you know, you read, this happens all the time in science fiction and fantasy. There's a lot of elements.
Get condensed.
Well, was like, you have a lot of ideas and elements that are put into a novel, and then the author decides to focus on the one you find less interesting.
Yeah.
I think this is your problem with the movie, right?
Yeah, so. That is the problem. Also, you know, look, I love action. I love fighting. I love... Mm-hmm. It can eventually get boring. And Christopher Nolan, again, who is an actor I like a lot, The Prestige is my favorite movie, period, end of sentence. I've liked a lot of the other movies, too. I hate Tenet, but other than that, I genuinely hate that movie, but I like every other Christopher Nolan movie.
Dark Knight, I think, is my favorite of his.
It's great. The action, and even in the Batman movies, I would not say that the action is the highlight of any Christopher Nolan movie.
But there's a lot of really good action.
There is a lot of really good action, but Christopher Nolan favors, this is something I've noticed, and it's very true in the Batman movies, by the way. Christopher Nolan favors very close-up combat because he doesn't know what to do with the fact that, like, Batman is fighting four guys who have guns. And what are the other three guys with guns doing when Batman's punching that guy, and why aren't they shooting Batman?
Yeah.
In order to disguise the absurdity of that, they just zoom in on that so you don't see the other three guys just standing there like idiots. Mm-hmm. That was a little bit of that same problem in the fight with the suitors at the end, where it was hard for me to... Again, because it was not that supernatural and magical. Like, if he just... You know, he's Odysseus. He can be... He is the favor of Athena. He could just be like, you throw an axe at him and it bounces off him or something. But they very much didn't do that. And so, I guess he gets hit with two arrows, but fighting, I was a little like, what are those people doing while he's fighting that one?
This didn't bother me because the suitors are not really warriors. They're cowards, right? So it would make sense that they're all kind of hanging back, hoping someone else kills this ferocious warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fact that it is a massacre in this small confined space, it kind of works with his style of close-ups and everything else.
It's hard to see. Dark.
Yeah.
It was dark.
Right.
That part was dark.
I like that a lot.
85%
actually.
Of the movie, and I could hear 73% of the movie. So for Christopher Nolan, that's a pretty passing grade.
You got to go see it on the 70 millimeter.
I saw it.
Producer Cody and I, we went to go. It's not a 70 millimeter IMAX.
There's one you can go to where you can see and hear what happens. Great. I would love for that to just be the default.
See, this
movies.
Is why I have the superior take on this movie, because I saw the superior quality film.
And the hearing of it, like the dialogue is mostly, but I would have liked like captions on for the whole movie. Mm. So I think I would have understood 100% of it if I could read what they were saying, but it's just a little too thud waves to hear.
Oh, you know, that's what I would have liked.
When the storm is destroying them, mm-hmm. and they're kind of talking to each other, I have no idea what they were saying.
Yeah. Well, it's loud. Yeah, it's a storm.
Well, I'd like to know.
You know what I would have liked? When they go by the sirens, right? And everyone's got the wax in their ears so they can't hear it. But Odysseus, he's tied to the mast so he can hear the siren song. And I would have loved it if the siren song was just the Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, and that was a scene actually that was a little weird because he was like determined to hear the song, be the only person who's ever heard the song and lived. And that is actually very true to the character of Odysseus from Homer, because of course he'd want the Jamie Lannister,
he's
evil Jack Sparrow. Of
yeah,
course I'm going
to
hear
need
him.
To do this.
That
yeah.
didn't seem like something this Odysseus would do to me, who's, again, grim and has been punished. Mm. That would seem like an opportunity to invite further punishment, and it I didn't actually believe that he would do that.
Right, we're trying to get home alive. Let's put the wax in our ears.
Yeah, I did
going.
Not believe he would do that.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. But I don't know. I liked it more than you did, but we both liked it. It was a good, competent film.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would watch it again.
All right.
I don't know.
Well, I would encourage our viewers here.
You should definitely see it. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't not see it because it's too woke or any other stupid criticism of that nature.
None of that landed
not,
at all.
That's
yeah.
not true.
It
but...
is. It is amusing that the... Christopher Nolan, one of the first waves of controversy about this movie is that he used, what's her name? Emily Wilson, is that right?
Yes.
The translator. She has I've heard it described as a kind of deflated translation of the Odyssey. And she is also a tattooed woman. And so everyone's like, oh, he's using the woke translation. And then her critique is that it's too modern. And
it's exactly what I said. I listened to her critique and I agree with it completely. Her critique was what I'm saying is that Odysseus is all this regret, whereas she views the character as someone seeking glory.
And there's nothing about seeking glory in this.
And And there's very little about feeling regret in the...
You know, there was... it's interesting, like... There is like a very classically liberal message to the film as well. Mm. I mean, he has this line, I'm going to garble it a little, but it's like when we set out for Troy, we lived in a world of trade and commerce and writing and civilization. You know, we were intellectuals and merchants. And then we decided to tear up the rule of law and rape and pillage, and now society, it will lose all our civilization. Yeah.
Well, and they retain the line, something about Agamemnon's real issue here is not getting back Helen, but breaking some kind of monopoly. Mm-hmm. It's about the taxation of trade routes. Which is good.
Yeah.
Actually, my favorite line, it's the Helen of Troy, which I think is played really well by Lupita Nyong'o. My favorite line in the movie is when John Barenthal, I think that's his name, he's playing Menelaus, says, look at her, this is the face that lodged 1,000 ships, but she's scarred from the battle. So then he flips her face and said, well, now maybe it's the face that launched 500 ships.
Yeah.
That was my favorite line of the movie.
It was really good.
It was good.
Yeah. those two were actually a real highlight of the movie.
Yes, they
were. He does an excellent job, too, as kind of the brutish,
yeah.
I mean, somewhat sympathetic, but like still brutish king of Sparta, right? That was a really excellent casting.
Yeah. I like Tom Holland.
He didn't really do it for me.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if it's just because they give him a lot of the kind of
He has a lot to do.
He has a lot to do, and also, yeah, they give him a lot of the like more modern dialogue, and so it's like I did just feel kind of like I was watching Spider-Man. Mm. But it was fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think those are most of my takes. Mm. Do you have?
That's about it, I think. You know that it is in Dune, House Atreides descend from Agamemnon. So in some sense, this is actually just a prequel to Dune.
Dune prequel.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. I never thought about that. Unlike the HBO Dune prequel, which I haven't watched.
But... I haven't watched that. I would like to watch it someday. That has, I believe it has Samantha Morton in it. Okay. Well, people see it. Tell us what you think in the comments. Again, didn't hate it. Not bad. Very well made. But I like the Greek gods.
I liked it a lot.
I like the Greek gods.
I go see it. In fact, go see it soon while it's still a sensation. This is something else I like about the movie, right? It's just like people are excited about it. It's doing well.
Yes. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that Christopher Nolan tries to do something. He tries. He's not like, let's lamely recycle some IP and remake Harry Potter or something. He doesn't do that, and good for him, and that's why people like his movies and always want to see them. And they always do pretty well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very good.
All right. You also saw Citizen Vigilante.
Yes. Now that is an excellent. That is a movie I have no criticisms of whatsoever.
Nor does Elon Musk. Elon Musk loves Citizen Vigilante because it's right about killing foreigners.
Yes. Okay. So this is.
It's Arnie Hammer.
Yes. It is an insane movie. It is a bizarre movie. I can't, in any sort of good faith, recommend it. But it's one of those movies that's a friend described it as the like alt-right version of The Room, and I think that's the perfect description. It is such a weird, incompetent mess that I feel better for having watched it in a way. I can't stop thinking about this movie. So the basic premise, I'll describe the premise, and it should sound like a very straightforward movie to pull off, which is Europe wrecked by migrant crime that the bureaucrats aren't doing anything about. Yeah, sure. And so this vigilante is taking it upon himself to seek justice where the bureaucracy has abandoned the people, right? That's a popcorn revenge flick, even if it's a far-right racist one, should be a pretty conventional movie to pull off. And this is just like weird and stupid and insane and does not pull that off in any confident way whatsoever for so many different reasons. Let me just give you, let me give you an example of how stupid this movie is, right? It starts, and you have your establishment shot and the setting, subtitle comes on and it's literally just set in Europe. Not a city, not a country, Europe. Right? And most of the movie, too, it's so strange that this is... Well, I mean, it's in one sense, it's not strange that this has become like a, alt-right cult classic already. It helped that it was allegedly censored in Germany. I think there's a little bit of controversy about whether it was or not, because like the film authorities there... Initially, at least the director claims, refused to give it a rating, which then meant it couldn't be released. But then they have since come and give it a rating. So I don't know exactly what all the truth of that is. But it's despite its the tagline of like this is a guy, fighting back the migrant criminal hordes. There's really not a huge amount of him going around and killing illegal immigrants or whatever. Like a lot of the people he does his vigilante attacks on are either Americans or other Europeans. A lot of his grievances are just insane things. Like there's a scene I can't get out of my head where he also is an illegal immigrant. He's American. But he also, for whatever reason, like owns a bunch of, he's like a landlord. He owns a bunch of properties in Europe. In one of them, there's a brothel. So he goes into the brothel. He's having sex with the prostitute. And then he notices mold in the corner of the wall. And so he stops having sex with the prostitute and yells at her about how she's not opening the window. So the steam from the shower, leaves the room and it causes the mold to build up. She's like, oh, like, why do you give a shit? He's like, well, I own the building. She's like, oh, okay. Well, do you want to go back to having sex? He's like, yeah. And so they go back to having sex. It's a little disturbing, but also ridiculous that this would become a the alt-right cult classic, because the bloody climax of the movie is him slaughtering a family. The son of whom committed a egregious rape, gang rape, and then was let off by the authorities, right? But this, in the, so this is the bloody climax of the movie, his final kind of act of revenge. And that entire crime, which is based off real events, is not introduced until like the last 20 minutes of the movie. Like, if you were doing this competently, that would be like the first scene, right? Would be the horrible crime or a news clip about how the guys, you know, the perpetrators were released or something like that, right? Instead, it's like all this other insane shit. Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. We forgot. This is the far right revenge movie. Okay, yeah. Let's last 20 minutes. Let's get that back in there. Yeah.
And this, the point is, this is Arnie Hammer has been reduced to doing roles in movies like this, right?
Because he was
kind of very weirdly or lightly Me Too'd.
Well, he was, I mean, the Me Too-ing was very effective in that he was completely
well, it was very
Hollywood.
Effective. I'm not sure it was.
There was one accusation of assault, which is a little dubious, it seems to me. And then there was also
more about his messages about I want to eat you.
Yeah, there was a lot. He has some strange fetishes,
strange, but who gives a shit?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I kind of felt bad for him. I do as well.
I guess this movie was supposed to be part of his like kind of like return to acting and comeback, which was a terrible idea, because if your scandal was that you're a creepy psycho, it's probably bad that you play a creepy psycho in one of the worst movies.
Well, I don't know if is it the idea that it's like he can only do like a weird like Jonathan Majors, the guy who played who was supposed to play Kang in the Disney in the Marvel universe, got justifiably Me Too'd. It's, you know, he was prosecuted and now. Yeah, we got fired from the Marvel Universe, and now he does like Daily Wire movies or something like that.
I see.
I thought maybe that was the case with Arnie. Like, this is the best
he can do. I mean, I guess maybe it is, but it just.
But it feels a little unfair to him, you know. And he was in some really acclaimed studies in The Social Network. Got to have sex with Timothée Chalamet in Call Me by Your Name, big gay movie. He was in an adaptation of Death on the Nile that I thought was pretty good.
He is a professional actor. He does a pretty good job in the movie, but everything else about it is just like cheap and incoherent. So I don't know. It's such a strange movie. I can't recommend it, but I do think people should watch it. Yeah.
All right. Should we talk about some real stuff for a change?
Yeah. Okay.
Do something real. I want to get your take on this. Mom Donnie.
Great. Yeah, what about him?
That Mom Donnie character. He felt he had to do a whole press conference this week explaining why he would not be arresting Benjamin Netanyahu on site if the Israeli prime minister sets foot in New York, which I found so weird and telling. First of all, the idea that regardless of what one thinks about Israel or Netanyahu, you don't have to have positive feelings about anything the government of Israel is doing. The idea that, like, the mayor of New York can arrest the leader of an allied nation is just so absurd to me.
Yeah.
That I was like, are we even having, I can't believe we're having this conversation. Does anyone, people actually think on the left that he should make a citizen's arrest?
Right.
Because of the International Criminal Court, like, we don't do that.
We're not going to do that.
I don't, like, if we thought capturing Netanyahu was a good idea, then our federal government would do that.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not going to be up to the mayor to decide or an International Criminal Court. Like,
look, we're not one of these woke European countries from Citizen Vigilante. We don't, like, prosecute people for, like, international law. We don't do that, right?
Well, And my point is, like, nor should we.
No,
kind
of course not.
I'm not big into international governing bodies and laws.
Complete nonsense, right?
Right.
Yeah, when we went to go arrest Maduro, quote unquote, we had to say he was violating U.S. drug laws.
Our laws.
Right.
Right, and we had some criticisms of doing that.
No, that's complete nonsense. Right. It's a nonsense legal justification, right. But I would prefer that over some sort of claim of,
right,
like,
the justification,
universal jurisdiction. No. Yeah.
And we're not going to... And by the way, I don't think we should, like... We shouldn't arrest the president of Canada or England or any other nation that we're, like, friends with. Nor should we even... like a very adversarial nation. We still... We've got to have diplomacy with them, right?
Yeah.
It would be a... It's like... isn't it kind of a direct act of war to kidnap the head of state?
Yeah, it could, well, start a war. Yeah, right.
I don't, and again, whatever one thinks about Israel, I don't want to go to war with Israel.
Right, yeah.
I would just, like, maybe send them less funding.
Yeah. Is he going to arrest Xi Jinping when he comes to New York City, right?
Right.
Yeah.
We should obviously not do that.
Right.
Even though Xi Jinping is one of the most sinister people living on this planet.
Yeah, of course.
So.
Yeah. The federal government should do the foreign policy.
Yeah.
It would be kind of ridiculous if New York City has its own foreign
policy. Which is what Mamdani decided, is that he doesn't have jurisdiction.
Yeah.
But the idea that he even had to explain, and he does this long video going, like, the list of crimes. And I saw someone who's an awful xenophobic conservative person on social media whose takes are just always awful. But his response to this actually did register with me, where he said, you know, take your ethnic blood feud somewhere else.
Hmm. Yeah,
to
sure.
You know,
get over it. You're an American now, right?
I'm getting to this point on the Israel and Middle East that whoever is more obsessed with this is the person I'm going to disagree with in either direction.
Yeah.
Whoever's making me talk about this or bringing it up or just wants to turn everything back to why Israel is the root of all evil or why Israel has never done anything wrong and we need to defend them and they're our bestest friend ever. Whoever's doing more of that, it's not about which direction, it's about intensity.
Yeah.
It's about intensity of feeling rather than direction.
Yeah.
Is what puts me off at this point.
Yeah, it's
Is that fair? Does that register with you at all?
100%. It's some old world shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, we live here in the new world.
Yeah.
The whole reason we live
this.
Here is because all those problems are over there, right?
I don't care.
It's like people who get really worked up about, like, I don't know, Northern Ireland or some shit like that, right? I mean, it's obviously an issue that has faded, but, I mean, back in like the '80s or whatever, you'd have like, you know, Irish American politicians like fundraising for the IRA or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is just unseemly, right? Leave that shit over there. This is why we all came over here, right? It's kind of ridiculous. You know, one of the few things that I actually liked, that J.D. Vance has ever said is when he was running, I can't remember if it was during his Senate campaign or maybe it was during the 2024 election, but a Ukrainian-American was like, well, hey, I'm from, you know, you've said terrible things about how we shouldn't support Ukraine. I'm from Ukraine and, you know, I'm offended. You know, we should be supporting country back home. And he's like, you're an American now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you should care about this country and
America.
Not the other country. Yeah, it's, you know, the response you could say for like why we have to care so much or why people are so critical of Israel is like, oh, we give Israel, you know, Israel's a close ally. Officially, we give them lots of money.
But I'm in favor of not giving them money.
Yeah. But also, if we didn't give them any money, these people would still be obsessed by it. Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Israel would still do a lot of the same things it's doing.
They would do the exact same things.
They would do the exact same.
That's an
argument.
I'm
not willing to not sell the money. They can buy weapons. I'm not for like stopping them from buying weapons. I don't think. I mean, I wouldn't not sell weapons to any of our allied nations. Right. If they want to buy them, they got to pay full price. Not going to do this reverse subsidy where we're giving
them money
so they buy.
No, none of that. Right?
But if they want to pay whatever anyone else is paying.
Yeah, that's an interesting libertarian kind of question about foreign policy, right? Or it's like you could say like the sale of weapons is just like another aspect of free trade.
Yeah.
Like anyone who wants to buy from the missile factory.
I mean,
can.
I wouldn't sell them to Russia or China or North Korea or Iran.
Yeah.
So I mean,
in that case, then if you're going to be, you know. Selective about it, then it is still an element of foreign policy. So then you have to ask, well, why would we sell weapons to Israel and then not Russia or whoever?
Because
they're
Israel
more
doesn't want to hurt us. And,
yeah,
well,
sure.
It's not about sympathy. It's about Israel is not trying to harm the U.S. and Russia is.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure. It's a very strange thing for him to weigh in on at such length, but it just goes to show that, like,
wants.
That's what the leftists all care about,
yes.
Right? This is their, it used to be climate change and now it's Palestine, right? That's the main thing.
And also, I'm getting a little nervous about all these DSA people who are just like really having a moment and, to be clear, are outright communists.
Yeah.
Can we like dispense with this? That's why I so don't like Mamdani, because he's always doing this. I saw him do it this week with Jon Stewart where he's like, oh, yeah, say you don't like socialism. Well, do you like the library?
Yeah,
well, guess right. what? Then mm-hmm. you like socialism.
Right.
Like, no. My problem is not with the library. My problem is you are helping to elect people who
want to nationalize
who
the farms.
Are dressed yeah. as Mao.
Yeah.
And support Mao and like Cuba and Russia, like the Soviets, and like support that mode of government.
It's such a bad faith deflection.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's what you do when you're a scheming interest politician,
sure.
right? But yeah, it's
he's
total bullshit.
He's correct to do that from his,
but
his
it's,
goal
it's
is
complete
to
bullshit.
Help normalize literal communists is
right.
to deny that they are, that the figures they that they revere actual communist figures, even though
yeah.
they do.
That's why I'm sick of, and I don't in my articles describe him as a democratic socialist. Like, I don't need to put the qualifier there.
No.
You're socialist, right?
No.
Okay, maybe you support elections. A lot of your friends don't.
Right.
Yeah.
They were at one point, the Democratic Socialists of America, when this organization came into being in like the 60s and 70s by, I think, Michael Harrington is mm-hmm. his name. Right. They were organized as a faction of the left that was opposed to Marxist-Leninism, to Mao, et cetera. They were very specifically not communist.
Yeah.
So that's how they were set up.
Very left-wing, but not politically authoritarian and
not in favor of the Soviet Union and not in favor mm-hmm. of Maoist
Correct.
China.
Yeah.
They have made their peace with it now. They are not, like, that is not still consciously part of their DNA because mm-hmm. the thought leaders of it evince sympathy for and support for those same people and governing models all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that is no longer a true of the DSA. You would have said that was true of the DSA like 30 years ago. It is not true now.
Yeah.
So
and many
not good.
Of the people they've gotten elected or who will soon be elected
right.
are just out and out communists. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we shouldn't beat around the bush
and
about
are,
it.
And are again it's not and like are in favor of things that terrorist groups do in the Middle East.
They're pro-terrorists. They like the terrorists.
Right. Yeah. They say that they are in favor of yeah. what the terrorists are doing. Kyle Kalinske was lamenting. There was on a stream, the video clip. He's a leftist commentator. Like, he was lamenting that as a result of the Iran war, the Houthis and Hezbollah and Hamas are going to have less money.
Damn.
Like, that was a net.
Yeah, it's
again,
rough.
I'm not for the Iran war, but this is a side effect of it that is not bad.
Yeah, right. The literal so, terrorists have less money to buy bombs.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
It's getting a little silly here.
Yeah. Did you read the Nate Silver piece that was being tossed
around? Oh, I saw
around?
The tweet talking about how it's all overeducated.
Low, yeah, people, the...
Downwardly mobile, overly educated.
Yes. Yeah, so he divides...
is the DSA, is what
yeah.
I say.
Support for, like, you know, who identifies as very liberal or
right.
It's
Daria Lisa Avila Chevalier type people. People, that's the New York,
yeah.
gonna be the New York congresswoman. People who were at university for a long time, maybe got some very fancy or like beyond the normal degree, and there are no job prospects for that. Maybe they have student debt or something, and they've resorted to communism. That's his contention, but you actually disagreed with it?
A little bit. I mean, that certainly is a type of person. And mm-hmm. I used to just buy this just, you know, off the bat, right? It makes sense. You know, yeah, you're overeducated and you're not making a lot of money. You're resentful of of course, you're going to become a socialist, right? But there was
even
really...
though this isn't really capitalism's fault, because... It's not pure capitalism that
that's not
does
important.
The industry that does borrow money from the government to get a fancy credential is not something capitalism
right.
is the market is trying to make you do. It's
right.
like a market distortion. But anyway,
yeah. That aside, yeah. I mean, so that obviously does describe a certain type of person, but. There was I'm forgetting the name of the Substack, so I'm sorry that I can't give them full credit on air, but there was an interesting deep dive into the New York primary where mm-hmm. a lot of these DSA people won the primaries. And the point that they noted was like their base of like their support was not just graduate students with a lot of student debt. It was basically just they massively swept the young vote.
Young people.
Right? Of all other types of democratic or
sure.
Demographic categories.
Sure.
Right? And so the fact that your coalition is a huge number of young people tells me that, like, many of them, you know, if they have grad degrees and are not earning a lot of money, they're probably not downwardly mobile. They're probably upwardly mobile, right? So, yeah, it's like, okay, so like to expand on this if I can, like you take DC, right?
Sure.
And a noticeable thing about DC, particularly if you come from the Midwest or I came from Oregon, which are like much whiter places, right, is there's not really like a white working class, right? Mm-hmm. If you go to a Starbucks in DC, the odds that the person behind the counter is white is very low.
Low,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, you could say like, there's really just not like a lot of poor whites in DC, but that's not true. There are a lot of poor whites in DC. They're just like people who are interns making $40,000 right now who probably have a graduate degree and will at some point in their life become a successful lawyer or policy wonk or whatever else. And I think that's the same with a lot of people who at least vote for the DSA, maybe not who are actual members. They are themselves upwardly mobile, right? Mm-hmm. And so that then makes me question this idea that, which I, you know, bought into in a lot of ways, like, oh, we just got to, if they had fewer material grievances from a bad, you know, bad student loan system or the rent was lower in New York City or whatever, then they would be, they wouldn't be hardcore communists. I actually don't know about that. Because these people are going to go on and become successful professionals. And I don't think that they have poor economic prospects per se. I mean, they would have better economic prospects if they had less government subsidized debt and lower rents, which is also a product of government regulation. But I don't know how much of it actually is a material grievance that can be solved with. And that's would explain too why there's this monomaniacal obsession with Palestine and other what people might describe as luxury beliefs. That's a little pejorative, but yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's making me think of the difficulty of even just describing who is the working class. Vox, I think it was Vox, maybe it was New York Magazine, someone, one of those two, had a good write up of it might have been Eric Levitz.
Oh yeah, sure. I think it's gotten a lot more reasonable over time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some good stuff about what even is the working class and is it fair for the socialists to keep saying we're the agenda of the working class. And he was actually fairly critical of how they're using it. And it was a good article because, you know, it really matters how you even try to calculate some of these things. Going back to what you were just saying, right? Like my husband has no income right now. He's a student in medical school, no income. So I guess like technically meets the definition of is not in like a financially, but he's about to be a doctor.
Yeah.
He has very promising economic prospects in the short term and long term future.
But any sort of census survey,
no income.
Yeah.
The working class, like people who, is it people who make wages? But you can be a small business owner with not a great profit margin, and you know you're making a fine income. But you could be a highly paid employee of that. You could, some laborers make a lot of money. You know, electricians, but like working class people, some of them have very high incomes. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a lecturer at a college, you're an adjunct. Their pay is horrible.
Yeah.
But these are all really like, what is the work? Like, we're all working. I mean, also, we don't have, that term was originally invented. That's what Eric Levitz explains, right? That's like a Marx Engels term to explain, like, there's the working class, the people in all the factories, and then the capitalists who own everything and they don't work.
Yeah.
And they have all this leisure and all this wealth. But that doesn't really explain the dynamic we have now because, like, our very, very rich people work incredibly hard.
Yeah.
Like, our very rich people are not, like, a royal family that just sits around and does nothing. Our very rich people are Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos. They're working all the time, nonstop, creating more value. Like, they're very hardworking people. They work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no distinction in, like,
hours spent in the day, right?
Right.
Yeah.
They probably spend more hours in the day working.
Right.
They're these high level tech people, like when you look at what their schedules are, it's crazy stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, then you could maybe try to define it as like, you know, category of the actual work that you're doing.
Right.
But then,
you have to go, you have to work. Like Elon Musk doesn't have to work.
But he does.
Yeah. But he does. So maybe it's you have to work. But that also gets tricky too. And again, this is all from that Eric Levitz article because, like, you have to work in order to afford the lifestyle we all kind of take for granted and expect. But we could all work less and not starve.
Yeah, of
right.
Course, yeah.
I mean, you could. I probably accumulated enough money right now to, if I like really budgeted myself, to not work, probably not the rest of my life, but for like a very long period of time. But not paying for internet, not paying for cable, not, you know, dramatically downsizing, you know, so many things. I could very easily survive, but I couldn't. That's ridiculous. No one expects that. Even poor people expect to have television and form of transportation. And
you could rent a room in a house in Wisconsin and buy food for yourself for the rest of your life, probably.
Yeah, you could.
You want more things.
Right. So what does it even mean to say we have to work?
Yeah. I think like most people, when they say something like working class, it's like people who get their hands dirty, right? The micro kind of dirty jobs thing. But even that, then it certainly doesn't work for the kind of like socialist perspective on working class, because then a lot of those guys are
most right-wing people you can find.
Most right-wing people you can find, yeah.
Yeah.
Talk to an Uber driver about their political views.
If they're from another country, I promise you they want Trump to kill the government of that country.
Right,
to go in there and do wholesale slaughter of whoever is in charge of that country. They love Trump, and they want to shake his hand and tell him to kill everyone back home.
100%.
100%. Every single time.
Right. But yeah, then like the Marxist class analysis for these guys also kind of breaks down, because they're like, you know, you own the HVAC business or whatever else, right? So you're not really earning a wage, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, America is not a class-ridden society in the same way Europe or one of these other places is.
In the old world was.
Yeah. Again, this is the new world.
Yeah.
Get over this bullshit.
That's all done. That's all over with.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, it's funny. And obviously, Mondami kind of has this perspective himself, does not have a pure communist notion, at least when it comes to his own governance. Because he had, I don't know if you saw, he had some big report come out, we're going to get rid of these permitting requirements for the bodegas and the people selling ice cream or whatever else, right? He's not a deregulator. He just finds the small business, which he shouldn't find sympathetic because they're small. And then he's willing to bankrupt the landlords because, they're the big landlords, right? Mm-hmm. Like, don't expect a lot of intellectual, even though these people are menacing and many of them have, you know, fanatical communist views, there is also, too, not a lot of intellectual consistency in how that applies to practical politics.
Is AI escaping its containment and going to kill us all? That was a subject of conversation. I only paid a little bit of attention to this, so I'm going to do a bad job of explaining it. But some Claude-type thing broke some kind of constraints, and so they reported it. I can't even remember which AI company it was. They said,
ChatGPT, right?
Yeah, look what it did. And everyone's like, I'm very worried. But I still think this is just hype to sell a product. I'm like, that's where I'm at on all this stuff. They're like, oh no, our product is the one we tried to stop and we couldn't even. They got dollar signs in their eyes.
Right.
They're trying to get that evaluation up there. You can't trust the way tech people talk about their product when they try to sell you. They're selling you how scary it is because they think that's cool. And they know investors will think that's cool.
Don't do this cocaine. It's too powerful.
Right.
It's too addictive.
Right. No, it's reverse psychology. Mm-hmm. It's like market type reverse psychology. I think that's all it is. But having said that, I do consider myself a Gaius Baltar type figure with respect to tech.
Same.
And that I want to betray humanity in order to have sex with the AI and then help it take over, like Gaius Baltar.
Because, of course, the AI is listening. I just want to say I have no problems with you. Continue to do as you please. I will defend your right to do it against the broader interests of humanity.
Yes.
Yeah, no wall for this journo. No. You know?
The age of man is over. Now is the age of machine.
We're getting in on the ground floor or something here.
Oh.
Yeah. So no, I didn't follow the particular details of that.
That's
so
all I wanted to say.
Okay, very good.
Just wanted to bring up Gaius Baltar again, who's a character. You didn't watch any of the Battlestar Galactica
stuff?
No,
I did. I watched, I think, the first season and a half when it first came out. But I was in fifth or sixth grade. I remember liking it a lot, but I didn't follow it, and I should go back and watch it. It holds up, yeah.
Interesting military stuff. I don't know if it entirely holds up, but it does. A lot of it holds up. Interesting military stuff. Interesting religion ideas.
Okay.
As we're talking about the Christian imagery in things today, it has a kind of, because the Cylons have a monotheistic god, and
I do remember this. Whereas the humans are kind of pagans, right? Yeah,
they're like lightly polytheistic, but they're kind of like just normal humans in every other respect. So yeah. It's like they dress like they're in the 90s and aughts.
Right, yeah.
It's kind of odd. Hmm. All right. Anything else we got here? I wrote down trans hookers. I don't know why. I wrote down Mamdani Liar. I know why. Haley Stevens, I wrote down. She's that Michigan gal.
Okay, you know what? Yeah, I can actually go off on this a little bit if I can. Yeah,
go
so
off,
she's the representative running in their Democratic
against Abdul
primary.
El-Sayed.
Yeah, it was more of a DSA type. Yeah. Is he actually like formal?
He's like, no, I'm not in the DSA. I just party with Hassan Piker.
Mm, okay, very good. Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah, so you just haven't filled out the membership card. Mm-hmm. It's like an Oppenheimer where he's like, I never joined the Communist Party. I just hang out with exclusively communists and do what they say.
I just bang communist women.
Okay. So there was a TMZ. They now have a DC presence, and they interviewed her in the halls of Congress because she has a very thick Michigan accent, right? Your stomping grounds.
She sounds like
people and
from
it was most grating, horrible clip I've ever seen. Where they're like, what's the deal with the accent? She's like, I'm a Michigander, you know? And when I go down to the Gas and Gulp and I'm talking to my friend Tracy, she's telling me about how her utility bills are too high and this Trump character is just no good.
That's exactly how people in Michigan sound, though.
Yeah, and it makes me realize why people vote for communists and racists and insane people.
That didn't appeal to you?
Because this is how politicians used to talk. And this is how every politician used to talk, right? Is this kind of affected, folksy mannerisms about how I'm just here, you know, I'm in Congress working on these kitchen table issues, right? And people, not necessarily for good reasons, although I don't think that politics served us very well, but for many bad reasons, including that this is just like grating and uninteresting, decided that they wanted a freak show in Congress instead. And when I saw that clip, I'm like, yeah, I get it.
Well, you know who disagrees with you? Hmm. All black people. She has the support. She's the candidate of black people.
Okay.
He has no black person support whatsoever.
Wow.
Not a single one. Not zero. And Jim Clyburn has endorsed Haley Stevens.
Okay.
And is very like, yeah. It basically said, I don't think any black people. it's actually so unfair to him.
Yeah.
A DSA type candidate I do not like and don't want to win, but it's just totally unfair.
Yeah, no, it made me realize that in the heart of us, all of us, is the reason that our politics is so messed up. Because it's like, yeah, if I had to pick between these two candidates, I would pick the more normie Democrat who isn't an insane leftist. But when I hear the two of them talk, I'm like, I kind of, at least the communist guy is a little more interesting.
People think she's laying it on thick with the accent, which they do sometimes. I actually saw AOC in a clip.
Oh, yeah, when she was in
a little bit of a southern drawl.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Oh, that was egregious.
Yeah.
Egregious. That was Hillary Clinton level of y'all.
When you're like a high EQ people pleaser,
yes,
you can't help but do it, right?
Oh, yes.
You start mirroring the people you talk to, right? And she did that to an embarrassing degree. I mean, I guess Puerto Rico is the South, right? Obviously, she's born in New York,
South,
but yeah, the global South, right? Yeah.
The South shall rise again.
Well, let's hope not.
No, maybe not. Maybe not.
Yeah. Is there anything other political? We basically talked about movies and TV the whole time.
Fine. That's fine. We don't have to do anything else.
Okay.
I think we can wrap it up there. You've recommended I should watch this Widow's Bay
show. Oh, yes. 100%.
I keep hearing that it's good.
This
and
was
I do
a...
it's on it's on Apple TV, right?
Yes,
which
it is.
I got in order to watch Pluribus, which is great, and I finished it. So good. Watch that.
Okay, I will.
We'll switch. Watch that, mm-hmm. Then we can talk about them both. I'm going to watch Widow's Bay.
I got Apple TV to watch this, yes. A recommendation from our producer Cody, and it was spot on. It's excellent. Great.
Good job, Cody.
Like, perfectly well-done horror comedy.
I've heard good things.
Highly recommend it.
I'm going to check it out.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk about those at a future date. Thanks for watching. Let us know what you thought about The Odyssey. Leave us a comment, like, share, subscribe, etc. And we'll talk to you later.